Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 58 of the Lesbian Book Club podcast with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month, we have an interview with Aussie author Selena Silcox that I recorded way back in January, and you're not going to want to miss it. It's a great listen, and it's coming up very shortly. But first, let's see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as finding out what's going on in the world of lesfic and what's going on in the world of me. First up, the Amazon charts. And topping those in the US, as I record this on March the 2nd, is Monica McCallan with her book Then and Now. Now, Monica was a guest on a very recent lesbian book club, and she was a delight. So scroll back in the feed and listen to that one if you want to find out more about her. Her latest novel is about a wedding planner named Lily, who has to work with the best friend of the bride, who only turns out to be a woman who smashed up Lily's heart into teeny tiny pieces a while ago. The woman is named Bennett. I do so love a good old US namage, and they don't come better than Bennett, do they? Can Lily and Bennett work through their differences, get the wedding done, and then maybe have some hot sex to congratulate themselves? I'd say the odds are high. Also doing well is Candice Harper with her book Mrs. Mix-Up. This one is the tale of two librarians, Sophia and Molly, whose attraction is causing their fellow librarians to tell them to shush around the book aisles. Beneath their cardiganed exteriors lie burning desires, clearly. And I'm not dissing cardigans, right? I do like a good cardigan. Sophia and Molly are sent on a personal development weekend where everyone accidentally thinks they're married due to a surname snafu, and so they have to share a bed. It's not going to go well, is it? Or perhaps it will. It depends if you are the personal development coach trying to get the attention of either Sophia or Molly when neither of them are actually going to be paying attention because they're going to instead want to be in bed with each other all weekend. Erica Lee's Twice Upon a Time is slaloming up the charts too, if you can slalom up the charts. I'm not sure about that one. Might have to work on my analogies. This one is a second chance romance and I heart those. And it's the story of Casey and Callie, whose names are way too similar in this humble author's opinion. I hope they have a daughter called Kylie and a son called Kai and perhaps a dog called Kit Kat. Anyway, one of the K's ends up living next door to the other, and one of the K's broke the other K's heart 10 years ago. So is everything going to be okay? I don't know. You're going to have to read the book. Also doing well is Susie Carr with her latest book, Uprooting. And Susie's also been a previous guest on this podcast and is very, very lovely. Uprooting sounds like a unique storyline, so it may well be worth a read. It's about Harper, a struggling musician, and Ivy, a life coach and green witch. And frankly, there's not enough green witches in lesbian fiction these days, is there? So well done, Susie, for bringing a green witch into the lesbian fiction arena. Now, there's some personal struggles going on in this one. There's some money issues, then some inner demons. Will the pair get over all their obstacles and have a spine-tingling kiss in the process? I sure hope so. Have a look at Uprooting if that sounds like your cup of tea. And of course, if you want something a little more literary, Bernardine Evaristo's Girl, Woman, Other is still atop the charts all around the world and has a pretty Booker Prize winner sticker on the cover. Pretty. So give that one a go if you're feeling like, you know, something a little more avant-garde. I'm sticking with my lesbian romance. And bafflingly, Stephen King is in the top five of the UK Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as I record this. But that is the vagaries of the Amazon charts, right? So there we go. That's the Amazon chart for the beginning of March 2020. We're already nearly 3 months down in 2020. How the heckity-doo-dah did that happen? So what have I been up to since I gave you the last podcast at the beginning of Feb? Well, quite a lot, actually. I've been finishing off my brand new book, which is Before You Say I Do. And by the time this podcast comes out, it may well already be on your Kindle or available for you to put on your Kindle. So I very much recommend that you do that. Before You Say I Do is the story of Jordan, who is a professional bridesmaid, and Abby. Abby's intended, Marcus, thinks she needs a bit of help with her wedding, or their wedding, and so he hires Jordan to help give Abby a hand over the final 5-6 weeks. Big mistake, really, Marcus, because Abby and Jordan, there's a very strong connection between the two, and there's a frisson, and it's only going to get worse as they go on a hen weekend together and they spend a lot of time together. Things aren't going to work out well for Marcus, are they? Or are they? I don't know. Read the book and find out. But before you say I do, I'm really excited about this one. I'm absolutely thrilled with it, actually. I think it's the best book I've ever written. It is out officially on March the 10th, but you might just find it hovering around an Amazon page by about March the 8th. So March the 10th, the official launch date. So please do go read that, and I hope you enjoy it, and do let me know what you think. Also, in audio news, Made in London came out in audio in February, so that's fantastic. That's book 6 in my London romance series and is the story of Heidi and Eden and a little toddler named Maya. So do have a listen of that. It's been narrated again by the wonderful Lucy Price Lewis, who's done the last 4 books in the London series. And I'm really thrilled with how it turned out. And I hope you enjoy a good audiobook if you're listening to this podcast. Other audiobook news is A Taste of Love, my book I brought out in August 2019. Will be coming out in audio at the end of March. The release date is the 31st of March, so keep an eye out for that one. And next up, I have a co-write. I'm going to be writing a lesbian romance with my fellow podcast host, TB Markinson. We host another podcast called Lesbians Who Write, and I can't wait for us to write together. We've never done it before, and she's coming over for London Book Fair. That is, if London Book Fair goes ahead, because right now, as I record this, it's in the balance with the coronavirus. So as long as we don't both come down with the coronavirus, we will be writing together. But you never know in this crazy world we're living in today. In the run-up to me launching my new book and all the other things that I've got slated to do in March and April, very busy. I did have a lovely holiday at the end of February, a week in the sun in Mallorca, in Port de Solaire, and it was just gorgeous. It was 70 degrees. I got to put my shorts on, put my short sleeve shirts on, and I even burnt my knees. So you can't get much more British than that, can you? In the world of lesfic, well, there's a few events just to alert you to. The Golden Crown Literary Society is going to be in Albuquerque this year, and the GCLS, as it's known to its mates, is like the Oscars of the lesbian fiction world, and that's going to be held from July the 8th to July the 12th in Albuquerque, USA. So if you're around there, or if you're booking flights, that's where you need to be headed. Closer to home, there's 2 events coming up on the lesbian fiction calendar, and I'm going to be at one of them. So if you're around Crawley, or you can travel to Crawley near Gatwick Airport in the south, the South Coast Lesfic Hangout is taking place on May the 2nd. So if you just Google South Coast Lesfic Hangout, there is a website. It's going to be on May the 2nd, and I will be there selling books, signing books, chatting about books, drinking coffee in between, touching books, everything about books, really. So do come along on May the 2nd to Crawley. And there's going to be an event called Queer the Shelves at Waterstones, Nottingham. So that's more if you're around the Midlands. Waterstones, Nottingham on June the 5th. And there's a ton of authors going to be at that one, including Julie Cohen, Claire Ashton, G. Benson, Wendy Hudson, and a host of lesfic favourites. And also, I should say, at the South Coast Lesfic Hangout, there's more than just me. that would be remiss of me. Kiki Archer's coming out of retirement for a day. There's going to be Melissa Therese, Claire Hyten Stevenson, loads and loads of others. So check out the website. So that's it from me. Let's get on to the interview with the wonderful Selena Silcox. Joining me today is Australian author S.R. Silcox, or Selena to her mates. She writes queer YA romance for girls who like girls, a truly underserved niche. Her books include the Girls of Summer series and the Alice Henderson series. She lives in Queensland, Australia, with her soon-to-be wife and dogs. So welcome, Selena.
Thanks, Claire. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you today?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Cool. And as I said, you're getting married in a few weeks, so huge congratulations on that. I know you've been with your partner for quite a while, but you're getting married because of the change in the Aussie law, right?
Yes, we are. We had a commitment ceremony 11 years ago, and I proposed to her and told her that if the law ever changed, she had to propose to me, and she did it. So we're going to make it legal in a few weeks.
Woohoo! Well, yes, huge congratulations on that. And good to know that she was listening and she obeyed. So that's good, isn't it?
it's always good to have a partner who listens to you.
Yeah, it is. I think you're starting off on exactly the right foot. So tell me about where you're sitting today. What can you see from where you are?
That's actually a funny story. Normally I'd be in my study, but we have a dog next door that's the size of a small horse that has a very big bark.
Right.
So I'm actually in the closet.
You just did this for me, didn't you? Just for the joke.
Yes, exactly. And I'm going to jump out of the closet at the end. What can I see? Well, I can see clothes, obviously. And yeah. I've got a bucket of shoes at my feet and an Aussie essential, which is a cricket bat.
So tell me a little bit about your writing journey and how you got started.
Well, my first project, I guess, that I ever wrote was in grade five. And that was an Astro Boy fanfic with a group of friends for a school project. I wrote the words and a couple of friends of mine did the pictures. I've got it lying around somewhere. Apart from that, I didn't start writing again until my early 20s, I'd say, and it was just a way for me to relax while I was doing an accounting degree. I took three attempts at that accounting degree and didn't finish them, but the writing stuck, so here we are.
Right. So when did you start sort of doing your books and your series and then thinking about publishing them?
It took a little while. I discovered Joe Conrath, I think, online.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about that was the advent of the Kindle back then, and I realised that I would be able to publish myself. And being an accountant and business-minded, I thought, well, I'll just start my own business and do my own thing. So that's how it all kind of got started. But it took a little while to be able to get to the point where I was able to leave accounting and then concentrate on my writing. So first book was only 6 or 7 years ago, I think, I published Crush.
Yeah, Joe Conrath, he was a big figure in the indie community, wasn't he, when it all started out?
Yeah, I think he got a lot of people started, actually. His blog was followed by quite a few people. And then, of course, it was Joanna Penn who started her blog, and the early adopters, I suppose, and showed what was possible. So it's just it was a no-brainer with me. My dad had his own business, and I always thought that I might like to have my own business. So what better to have my own writing business?
Yeah, no, awesome. And so when did you publish your first novel?
6 or 7 years ago with Crush, but there was a book before that, A Christmas Story, Three Wishes.
Yeah.
And that was actually a book that I wrote for my fiancé, because I'd had, I think it was 18 months it took me to finish a book once I'd left accounting, and she was getting quite cranky with me not producing anything. So I gave myself a challenge to write her a book for Christmas, and it took me 6 weeks from start to finish to write a Christmas novella for her, and then Crush followed soon after. So
yeah, well, 18 months is pretty good, actually. It took me 5 years to do my first book, so 18 months is speedy. So how would you describe your books to someone who's never read one?
I had a reader describe my books once as cheesy rom-coms done right with girls who like girls, and I really like that description. Because I try to make them fun and lighthearted with no angst, and no one dies in the end. So, and the amount of, you know, kids, especially when you say, you know, no one dies at the end, and they throw up their hands and go, it's about time. You know, it's fantastic. So
yeah. And I too would be very happy with that description. So yeah, definitely. So you write YA sweet romance for girls who like girls, as you said. And I read your novel Crush in preparation for this, and I've got to say, I am still smiling. I fell in love with it. I'm not going to lie. I loved its freshness, its innocence, its setting. So tell me a little bit about writing that one.
It started out as a 21,000 word novella. Actually, I just had this idea of a girl standing on a hill with an old beat up trail bike, and it kind of reminded me of my hometown. So, and Tess was kind of born, and it was originally just from her point of view only. Then I sent it off to a publisher. Mm-hmm. It was suggested to me that I increase the word count to their minimum to print, which is 40,000 words, so effectively doubling that word count.
Yeah.
And the only way I knew how to do that was to bring in the other main character, Maddie's point of view. So that's what I did. I just had to move a few things around in the plot to make the work with two main characters' point of views then, and And that's what grew out of it. So, and then it got rejected by the publisher. So I guess it was the universe telling me that I should do it myself. So it was a last minute decision basically to send that manuscript in. I was originally going to self-publish it, but, you know, I guess there was still that inkling of wanting to have a publisher approve. And, yeah, having it rejected just kicked me over the line to do it myself.
Yeah. And it's based in a small Australian town, and you grew up in one, and you create very vivid imagery of sort of in your writing, making the landscape kind of a character in the book. So how much do you work on making your scenery come to life? I particularly liked all the descriptions of the cane fires, which is kind of a plot point at the beginning, right?
Yeah, the cane fires play a pretty major part in that book, and I grew up around cane fires. My grandparents had a sugarcane farm, and I spent a lot of time there when I was a kid. It was quite easy basing the town of Chesterfield around my hometown, and I just remembered what it was like to be out on the farm and watching my grandfather. You know, he would get out with the hoe and hoe weeds by hand out of his cane fields. So it was, those memories were quite vivid. But I'm actually quite bad at description. I write quite sparsely, so the first drafts tend to be just getting down what's happening, and some dialogue banter between characters, I suppose, and then I have to go back and colour it all in. It took a lot of work to get those descriptions right, but yeah, it came out quite well, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that it was very rich actually, and I suppose for someone like me who's, you know, living in the UK, I didn't know what a cane farm was, didn't know what a cane fire was. So, like, it was something so different, but you described it very well. So I was also a fan of the intrigue involved in the plot, even though it was a romance, and you kept a lot hidden about one of the characters, which I thought you did well. So do you have any tips on keeping the intrigue going? Because I was like, I have to turn the page to see what the thing is.
I do it accidentally, really, because sometimes I think I've written something on the page, but it's still actually in my head. Mm-hmm. So it takes someone from outside to let me know that it's actually not there. Mm-hmm. But the good thing about that is that, you know, my editor and my better readers can tell me what is missing for them, and then I just include that. So it makes it easy to not include the stuff that would lead readers to conclusions that I want them to lead them to, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So from that process, I've learned basically that if you work out what's important for your readers to know and work out what's important for the characters to know, that's the stuff that you include. But you can also play around with that and show your readers something or tell your readers something and not the characters. And that can add to some really good tension because, you know, you kind of get that visual of readers yelling at the page because the characters don't know what they know. Mm-hmm. And it can be quite fun to do that.
Yeah, definitely. And I was intrigued. I was like, no, I have to turn the page. So YA is an underserved niche in lesbian romance, and you've made it your genre, which I think is fabulous. What made you do that, and what are the key aspects to writing good YA?
Oh, good YA is subjective, I think. I just like the first in YA, especially the age group that I write for is on the younger side. YA currently tends to skew from that 16-year-old and up age group, and particularly for adults, read it quite a fair bit. And there's that gap kind of in the middle from maybe 12 or 13 and up, where kids are discovering, you know, who they are and where they fit in the world. And I really like that at that age kids are starting to discover that the world is bigger than just them, but they're still, you know, having those smaller struggles that feel big. You know, there's first kisses and first crushes and first betrayals and those types of things that I really like exploring in those in the stories. And I don't remember ever being able to find something that represented me on the page exactly. So that's sort of why I started writing YA, but I fell into it with Crush. Crush came to me with 17-year-old Tess, and I guess if Tess had been, you know, a mid-20s woman, I would have been writing adult lesbian fiction. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got such a great response from Crush that I thought, you know, I might write some more YA if I get the ideas for it. So
How do you sort of go about writing it? Do you have diaries that you draw on from that age, or have you just got a great memory to tap into all that, your past emotions?
Well, I have to work hard to tap into the memory. Yeah. I don't have any diaries from back then. I don't think if I did, I'd want to go back and read them anyway. I think I'd be pretty angsty.
Yeah, it could be painful.
But I've got nieces and nephews that are kind of growing, you know, going through that age group, and it's interesting to see how they see the world and how they interact with their friends and family and stuff. And there's certain points that, you know, at my age now, I can look back on with age and experience and understand what I was thinking and what I was feeling and why now, whereas back then I had no idea that you know, at 16 I had a crush on a girl, but now I can look back and I had a vivid memory that I bring up quite a fair bit to try and get those feelings of first crush when I write these stories, of being at a camp, sitting across from the girl that now I know I had a crush on back then, but had no idea when I was 16, and seeing her look up and smile at me across a campfire. And that is such a vivid memory. I invoke that one in particular to try and get that kind of, you know, that gooey feeling that you get when your insides go to mush when a cute girl smiles at you. So looking at photos, I guess, gives me jolts too. So
I guess that's true, actually. And probably listening to music probably evokes memories too, doesn't it? Sort of that normally does it for me as well.
Music does have quite a profound effect on me. I will be listening to music and cry, like at the moment, you know, with the wedding, I'm looking at playlists and the, you know, playing love songs and start bawling because it's, you know, so lovely and emotional. So I have a very visceral reaction to it. So.
No, it's true. I used to be a music journalist. I remember interviewing some musicians, and I was sort of telling them, I've got this memory, and it's when I hear your music, it evokes this emotion. And they were saying it's the same for them, because they were going through a certain thing when they were writing it. And you don't think about it from the other side as well. But I guess it's the same when we write books, isn't it? They always evoke a certain time in your life. And have you got plans to extend this? So Crush is part of the Girls of Summer series. I know you've got two books in it.
Yep.
Have you got plans to extend that one?
I have. I actually have quite big plans for that. I just haven't worked out how I'm going to go about it. I've got another book. So After Summer is another novel, and Written in the Stars is a novella. I really would like to make it a multi-author series, because I will write the Australian experience, and I'd love to include other authors and their experiences from around the world in that same sort of, you know, summer setting, small town setting, that type of thing. Haven't worked out business wise how to go about that, but you know, I'm not averse to a publisher picking it up. So if anyone's interested, I'm willing to listen.
Or if anybody wants to write their story from the summer of their youth, get in touch, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah.
And one thing I saw on your website that I was quite made me smile is you're scared of spiders and you live in Australia. So how does that work? Let me know.
I've actually been known to put off going to the toilet because there's a spider in the bathroom, yelling at my fiancé to stop the car. As soon as we're slowed down enough, I jump out and won't get in until she's got the spider out of the car. So, but I'm very lucky that she will get rid of them. I just don't like them at all. We don't get along, but we've got an agreement, the spiders and I, at the moment. They don't show themselves to me. I don't know they're there. So we're both happy.
So that's good. That's working well today, is it?
It's working quite well today.
Yeah, there's no spiders in the closet, because that would be bad.
Yeah, I've already de-spidered the closet.
Good. So you're a massive sports fan as well, especially cricket and football, and your other series, Alice Henderson, is a YA sports series. So tell me about writing that and the challenges including cricket in a book, because as you probably know, cricket is not very understood by half the world. I read your reviews and they're saying, even though I don't understand it, it's a great read. So you're doing something right.
I'm really, really pleased with those reviews. You know, I don't like cricket, but I'll take that any day of the week. It's a bit of a balancing act, you know, not getting too much into the weeds with the cricket jargon and trying to balance the relationships that Alice goes through in that series along, you know, the emotional journey and the mental journey that she has to go through in those books. So I tend to write the cricket scenes first and then, you know, do the the other emotional and relationship scenes in between, because the cricket scenes are what I know best.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I try and make sure I'm making her react to those scenes and what other people are doing, other characters are doing in those scenes. One of the things I decided not to do was have Alice over-explain, because it's from her point of view. So I've basically just trusted the reader that if there's anything that they don't understand, they'll either email me and ask me what the heck I'm talking about, or they'll jump on Google and try and find out, you know, what the terminology means.
Yeah.
So, but I am considering putting, you know, a dictionary in the back of the book so that people who aren't familiar with cricket understand what the jargon is.
Mm. Yeah, because, I mean, I must admit, I grew up in a cricket-loving household, and I don't mind watching cricket. It's not my favourite sport, but still, I don't understand some of the terminology.
I'm marrying someone who you know, the last thing she wants to do is watch the cricket with me, but I've talked her into going down to the World Cup final the week before we get married, so.
That's love. And as I said, you're a big cricket and football fan, but you're passionate about women's sports in particular. What's the state of women's sports at the moment, do you think?
Oh, it's on the rise, isn't it?
Mm.
With the Women's Cricket World Cup, and we've got, here in Australia, we've got the Matildas in there, Olympic qualifiers coming up this weekend. And the Matildas and the Southern Stars in Australia are constantly high on the list for most trusted sports teams and favourite sports teams. So, I think women treat sport differently, because we've always, you know, been treated as second best. So to now have women be able to choose sport, professional sport, as their career is just an amazing thing. And I think men's sport can really, really learn how to engage with fans from women, because they do some fantastic outreach with their fans, and the amount of time that they give, and, you know, it's just amazing to watch. So, and, you know, I'm jealous. I grew up in an age where I didn't know that we had professional or elite teams. I was a handy medium fast bowler in my day, and I missed out. So
yeah, born at the wrong time. Yeah, my best friend, she always says the same thing, because she was a brilliant football player. And she's just like, you know, I was born at the wrong time. Whereas I was just an enthusiastic football player. I was never going to get in any elite sports team.
Did you get most improved trophies every year?
Yeah, you know, God loves a trier. That's what I got.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's a constant discussion between my fiancé and I about the size of our trophies. She got participation trophies, and I actually was quite good. I got, you know, player of the year and player's player and coach's choice.
Right. You're also a prolific baker, because you're always putting images of your biscuits and cakes online. So is baking going to appear in your future books?
I can't see why not. I'd love to write something. I've got a story that I've been working on for a little while for a pen name I'm going to launch hopefully the end of the year, about a pub, and that kind of came about because I started brewing my own beer. So definitely, if I could come up with the right types of characters, maybe a mystery, cozy mystery. That's what they tend to suit bakery.
Beer and biscuits, more of that. You said that you want to write more mainstream lesbian romance as well, aimed more at the adult market. So is this book one of those?
Yeah, it will be. It will be one. I've got one that I've probably about 80% finished, and that's just been put on the back burner because I need to get the third book in the Alice Henderson series out. I've got a pretty snarky cop that I've been, or ex-cop that I've been working on for probably about 10 years now, tinkering around the edges with. So I try to work out what to do with her, because I'm having some really good fun just writing scenes with her. And I've got a sports series planned as well. So many ideas, so little time at the moment.
Yeah, that is a lot planned. So you're going to be busy. So are you a full-time writer?
I am. I haven't replaced my accounting income yet, but I'm really lucky that I've got an understanding partner. So
how do you manage your time? What's your writing process? What's your day? And do you have word counts when you're writing?
I tend to write in fits and starts, which is a problem when you're a full-time writer. So, but I'm trying to get better. I'm using Pomodoro method at the moment, so 20-minute sprints a few times a day. And I do have a word count that I like to hit, but the accountant in me comes out when I'm, you know, I'm trying to work out how many words in a project, and then, and, you know, dividing that by my average words per hour, and then working out how many sessions that means. And so I can go, okay, well, it'll take me X amount of hours to do that in so many sessions. It makes it easier to, you know, like they say, you know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? So
you can definitely play with spreadsheets, so you can bring out your accounting side when you're doing work out.
Oh, I have multiple spreadsheets on WordCount that track so many different things. So I can't get rid of the accounting side of my brain.
No, I never used a WordCount, a spreadsheet really. Like a little bit in my former jobs, but really not very much. But I actually quite like them now. It's a weird thing.
One of my old bosses, he was a whiz on spreadsheets, and I used to just send him basic ones, and he'd send them back all prettied up because he just, you know, went nuts on them.
Mm.
And I never kind of understood that until I started writing and had my own business, and just looking at how my income was divided up and my expenses and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, now I have these massive big spreadsheets with all the different places where I get my income from, and then I've got all these little pretty charts that I can look at, and now I understand why he used to do that. So it's so much easier to read than just plain figures.
Yeah, definitely. I've just done my 2020 schedule, and it's colour-coded, and it makes me happy. So have you got a best piece of writing advice you've ever been given?
Just to get it done, and that first drafts suck. And, you know, I have to tell myself that all the time. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, and I actually was telling myself that mantra this morning when I was working on Alice Henderson book 3, that, you know, just get it down. It doesn't have to be pretty. You can fix it later.
And are you an avid reader of lesbian fiction?
I haven't been. I've dabbled over the years in it because I've mainly read young adult and older middle grade, looking for queer fiction to, you know, as research and for enjoyment.
Yeah.
But I've been getting into a little bit more adult lesbian fiction the last couple of years, and part of that's, you know, connecting with other authors as well. We've got a small group of Aussie authors that I'm part of now, and I'm starting to read their work, and it's really good hearing the Australian voice. I think that's kind of what's getting me into it. So reading Code of Conduct at the moment. Really enjoying that. So I do intend to read a lot more.
Is that the tennis one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I've read that. Very good.
Sports books for the win, I think.
Yeah. And she knows her tennis. That comes through. Wow, if you're a tennis fan, pick up Code of Conduct. So if someone's coming fresh to your books, which one should they pick up first?
Probably Crush, because that's my first one. I guess I threw everything at the wall for that one. It epitomises my style. It's fun and lighthearted. Very Australian. There's lots of Aussie words in there that confuse people, like Ute and Esky. I've got some fun secondary characters as well, and the friendships with Tess and Maddie are quite good. But and that one's closest to my heart as well, because it's got the most of me in it, I think, with the setting. So
yeah, okay. So if you're new, pick up Crush. And if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
I would choose Bryce Courtney, who is a beloved Australian author. He sadly died a few years ago. He wrote massive brick-sized family sagas that were released every Christmas. You know, if you were an avid reader, you'd get a Bryce Courtney book in your stocking every Christmas. Just his characterisation and the research that went into his books was just amazing. And the other one I guess I'd pick is J.K. Rowling, the magic that she invoked in that middle grade fiction, you know, and holding together so many character stories in that whole series. And, you know, it just amazes me that she knows all of their birthdays and, you know, their backgrounds and their family histories. That just blows my mind, because I'm really bad at characterisation. So
I think you might be better at all these things than you think you are.
Well, yeah, I probably am. I feel like I'm bad at it, but yeah.
Well, I think that's a great answer, actually, because it's like you said, it's kind of classic Australian mixed with middle grade YA. So and that is where you're at right now, right? And where can we just find out more about you?
You can jump on my website at srsilcox.com. You can sign up for my newsletter, and I'm on all the socials, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. I'm hanging out mostly on Facebook and Twitter lately, and I'm just srsilcox everywhere.
Cool. All right, well, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time all the way from Australia.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers.
That's the end of this lesbian book club. So this is me, your host, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you'd like to know anything more about me or my ebooks, print books or audiobooks, just head on over to my website at www.clairelydon.co.uk, where you can find all about my books and all about me. I'm also available on all the major platforms all around the world, so Kindle, Apple Books, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, Kobo and Bella Books, and at a host of other streaming services for both ebook and audio. If you'd like to join my VIP reader group and get a free lesbian romance, It Had to Be You, just head on over to my website, www.clairelydon.co.uk, and sign up on the homepage. Thanks so much to Denise for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And join me next time round in April, when I've got a fantastic interview with lesfic romance legend, Karen Callmaker. See you then.